Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 154 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This week, we are discussing episode 213, the finale of season 2, entitled Dragonfly and Amber.
Indeed we are, but first, long-awaited feedback from episode 212 from our listeners and fellow Outlander fans. First up is Lisa T.
Hi, lasses. It's Lisa T. I just wanted to share some wee thoughts on the last episode that we saw, which was season 2, episode 12. One of the things that I actually really liked that they changed is that Jamie does not get to see Blackjack in that episode. That's always something in the book that kind of bothered me. I just didn't think that Jamie would go anywhere with Jack, let alone, you know, leave with him after Alex passes away. So I thought that that was a great change. And then I loved the fraternal parallel between both Blackjack and Alex and Colm and Dougal. I just thought that was, you know, a wonderful twist that Anne Tenney wrote in there. I thought that was brilliant. I thought it was a wonderful way to showcase some of our favorite actors from both seasons and get some really, really fine performances out of Gary Lewis, Graham McTavish, of course, Tobias Menzies. So I thought that was just a really lovely way in the penultimate episode to give them a huge shout out and sort of their own curtain call. Those are my wee thoughts. Have a great rest of your day, and I look forward to hearing the podcast. Thanks a lot. Bye.
So I have a lot of feelings, most of which are about the book, but the feelings I'm going to talk about today are specifically about the book. I can see what Lisa was saying about not understanding Jamie associating with Blackjack in the books, but there's a lot more going on in the books than is explored in the series as far as Blackjack is concerned. And I think it's a lot more complex. And as is Jamie. I think Jamie is probably a lot more complex in the series than he is in the book.
What about Claire? Is Claire
complex? No. No, Claire is not. Claire puts all of her stuff on the table and calls it a day. But I think we lost a lot personally as viewers by that not being a Jamie interaction, by him not being present. I think that it spoke volumes to the character of Jamie for him being there and putting his own feelings and hurt aside to be the witness at the wedding. I feel that that was something that spoke volumes to that character. So while I loved more Murta, I always love more Murta, like legitimately, Duncan Lacroix. I could be totally pronouncing that wrong because I've never had a conversation with him, but I will at one point, I promise. I love more and more and more Murtaugh, and if there's one character that survives Culloden that shouldn't have, I hope it's him. That being said, that scene was really a Jamie scene, so I feel that that scene spoke volumes to the character of Jamie. So I think that we viewers lost a little that the book readers gained from him being part of that scene. Because that, can you imagine that? Going to witness the wedding of the man who brutalized you to someone else and not murdering him on sight. I mean, that spoke volumes to me of that character.
And except for what happens, or what we see, we don't know what happens, but except we still don't know in book 8 what happens. But except for what is shown through Jamie's eyes at the beginning of Voyager, which we will not spoil, but if you come to our Voyager read along, you will learn it quickly if you don't already know. Having Jamie attend that wedding was almost full circle. It almost proved he didn't like being there in the book. He didn't love what was going on, but he found some humanity in what was happening. He was able to see the humanity in Blackjack for his suffering and for the one person that he loved. And he could see the benefit for Mary and the child, right? And he was there, I mean, kind of supporting Claire and I guess just doing the right thing. But my point is him being able to do that, him being able to look over his suffering and what he went through kind of shows that he's not perfect, but he is so much better off than he was at the beginning of the book and at the end of Outlander as far as his healing goes.
For sure.
So next up is Brittany.
Hey, Ginger and Summer. This is Brittany calling from San Jose. I'm calling about episode 212, The Hail Mary. And I just wanted to say the one thing I really appreciated about your podcast this past week, despite all of the laughs, was kind of the in-depth look at Dougal and his character and TV Dougal versus book Dougal. And while I was sitting there listening to you guys, it made what happens in the next episode with him and Jamie and Claire so much more understandable, because you do realize he's lost everything that he's ever worked for as far as wanting to be Laird and to take care of Hamish and, you know, having his doing on the throne. He loses all that. And so it's almost like he snaps, you know, and what happens next episode is almost the straw that breaks the camel's back. But yeah, it made me have a better understanding of Dougal, maybe not a like or dislike, but definitely a better understanding. And I don't know if I have predictions for 213, except tears. I definitely hope we get some whiplash because I feel like everybody needs to experience that, especially if they haven't read the book, because it's jarring when you read the book. And I'm trying to remember if a certain other traveler appears end of Dragonfly and Amber, if that's the beginning of Voyager, but if it is at the end of DIA, I'm wondering if they're going to include it at the end of next episode, but I can't remember. Sometimes they all bleed together. Anyway, thanks so much for your podcast and all the work you guys put in. You always make my commute so much more enjoyable. So I hope you guys have a good night. Thanks. Bye.
I personally loved the exploration of Dougal. I think that giving him...
I'd like to thank Brittany for calling and reminding us that sometimes we say things that are sometimes insightful.
I don't promise to do anything insightful right now.
Ever again.
Or ever again.
At least the rest of the year.
Or anything. My point is that particular piece of that episode was, for me, so delightful because we all knew Dougal was not long for this world. So giving him his lost moment... And by Lost, I mean the television show Lost, where you get some character motivation and some backstory and you fully understand that character before we off them is so important because he was never, I would say, completely two-dimensional, but they definitely gave him some extra dimensions last week. So it made his loss larger and more keenly felt, I thought.
And next up is Connie.
Hello, Podlasses. This is Connie calling from Costa Rica. I wanted to share my thoughts about episode 212 and the adaptation for television. I think it was a good choice of the writers not to include Jamie in the room at the wedding of Black Jack Randall and Mary Hawkins. As readers of the books, we have access to the interior development, spiritual development of Jamie as he struggles with forgiving the man who abused him. But in the proximity in time of seeing this abuse on our television screens, I think that those who have not read the books would have very difficult time swallowing that Jamie could be in the same room with Black Jack Randall and not do him bodily harm after all that was done to himself. I think that Murtaugh being present was a good choice because there was somebody there to protect Claire. And I think that his offer to marry Mary was wonderfully done. But the reasons for Mary to have income after Alex's death and Black Jack's presumed proximate death was very correct. So thank you, and I hope that you live long and prosper. Bye, Pod.
Oh, Connie. You know, we've included Connie so many times in our podcast for like ever, but we've never had her voice. And I think that this, legitimately added a whole new layer to anything Connie has ever sent in or said on our podcast in the past. I love it. Myrta, legitimately, like, I still will go back and think about that episode and think, you know, I will gladly volunteer. He doesn't need to marry Mary. He can marry me. Because I think that between the writers and between Duncan's portrayal of the character, he is legitimately my favorite right now. Oh, did you see that picture online? Somebody posted a picture.
Oh, with him and that shirt going like that.
Forget the shirt. Did you notice the beard? He's growing it back because he shaved it all off at the end of the season. It
could have been an older photo.
I don't think it
grows that fast. I could be wrong.
I mean,
the end of the season's been a while.
Yeah. But the point, it was not as long as it was in the episodes, but it was definitely the beginnings. It was a longer beard. My hope is my dreams will be fulfilled with who may or may not survive Culloden.
I almost misquoted a much loved musical we share.
Oh, Lord.
Instead of, I almost said, I'll be back, but sorry, you'll be back. So I'm just wondering if the beard and the coming of August, September, beginning of filming of season 3.
Well, here's the thing. We know they're going to refilm. No, you're good. We know they're still going to film parts of Culloden because we haven't seen it.
Any of Culloden.
Right. So yeah. They haven't recorded and or any of it. So we do know that we'll have Duncan back for at least part of it because he has to come back for at least Culloden. But my hopes and dreams are pinned on Murtaugh surviving. I know in the books, Diana killed him without mercy. Didn't even think about it. He was just gone. And it was important, I think, for the story to show that everyone, like almost no one survived. Like anyone involved in Culloden, almost all of them just did not make it. Like, because that's the truth of the scenario. Like, almost everyone involved in Culloden that was on the Highlander side perished. Like, they did not survive. So I think that the purpose behind it with her writings was sound, and I get it. But personally, I really want Myrta to survive.
It's probably not a very fair observation, but I was going to say, I never heard this Save Myrta stuff until the TV show.
Well,
people like Myrta and loved Myrta, but didn't like...
But let's be honest. When you're reading, as involved as you get with reading, and I feel like I was fairly involved while reading, but by the time I found the books, he was long dead. Let's be honest. I started with book 4, so by the time I got to book 4, everything that had already happened was already set in stone and done. Whereas, and I honestly don't think they fleshed out Myrta nearly as much in the books as they did in the show. Like, sure. Because they gave him
he
got more screen time. He just got to have more heart. Like, we got more connected and part of that character. So, no, I don't think that there was nearly as much Save Myrta as far as the books were concerned. But we didn't have social media then like we do now. Like, we didn't have internet then like we do now. Like, there was internet, but it was not the same. Not when these books came out.
And finally, one of our favorites, as always, Michael.
Howdy, Ginger. Howdy, Summer. This is Michael from Shawnee, Kansas. I would like to first congratulate you for your milestone event of your sesquicentennial podcast. As I'm recording this, you've already put out for us episode 152, but I wanted to get that in. I'd also like to mention that I achieved a personal milestone moment earlier this week. I have reached the half-century mark. Anyway, in this latest episode, the Hail Mary, the only thing I want to talk about is Colin McKenzie. Back earlier in episode 208, where Colin and Claire meet for the first time, Claire's a little bit confrontational, Colin kind of holds his own, and they seem to part on amicable terms. But in this episode, I see that Colin truly likes Claire, and what I would like to put into this is Dougal McKenzie may have arranged the marriage between Claire and Jamie. I think that it was Cullum that blessed their marriage. Since I was unable to meet the deadline for the previous listener feedback, I would like to say I liked how Diana adapted her story into that episode, especially the Duke's motive for the attack in Paris. And in the book, there was no collaboration going on between the Duke and Monsieur Lecomte. And there was an important scene that's in the book that was not in the TV show that was part of the Duke's book motive, and I like how it was adapted. And the last thing I want to say about that particular episode is the one change I also liked that was a little bit disturbing was Murtaugh. In the book, his encounter with the Duke was off page, but in the TV show, we got to be with Murtaugh right there.
In the room where it happens.
And he always ends with it, too.
Oh, my God. Fired. You literally can't post that and not have commentary. You just left it there?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Oh, Lord. So he had to find out. Again, I don't listen to this before.
Oh. Okay, so.
It wasn't as shocking as Jared's.
Oh, that was horrifying, actually.
That made me, like, almost pee myself with laughter and horror.
I felt no laughter when it came up, personally.
It scared me.
Because I'd heard it before.
Oh, I heard it before when I edited it 85 times.
I know, but it's different when you're listening to it and you're not the person who did it. Anyway, so book version of Murtaugh beheading the Duke. I thought it was stronger for them to not kill Hugh Monroe in it and have him lay that at some nameless person we've never seen before. So I agree that I thought it was a much stronger choice for Murtaugh to do that in front of us. Was it possibly traumatizing and horrific for poor Mary and Claire? Absolutely. But it was like that full circle moment where he was like, he promised to lay vengeance at their feet. And he's like, you have your vengeance. So it was very satisfying and fulfilling for that part of me for that to be completed. So I agree with you there. So as I said earlier, now, on to episode 213, entitled Dragonfly and Amber, the season finale of season 2 of Outlander.
So the opening title card was like, I think, one other in that, well, no, I guess it was like, in 211, there was like, it wasn't just a still, it was an action. They were cleaning up the wig.
It wasn't center. Even really a title card, no, though. It was more like, hey.
It was a sequence, almost.
Let's set the scene for the time period.
Yeah.
But at first I was like, what am I seeing? And then I was like, oh, it's Avengers. Yep. And then I thought to myself, oh, look, it's Diana Riggs. Oh, she's amazing. And then I thought, oh, this makes me think of Game of Thrones because she's in Game of Thrones. So there was a lot going on.
This is quite deep. This choice that they made. So it was a video, as Summer said, of a 1960s TV series, The Avengers. And the doorbell that they showed was for a Ms. Emma Peel, a fictional spy and a master of martial arts. She's a fencer, a genius, knowledgeable in the sciences. And her husband, Peter Peel, was a pilot whose plane disappeared over the Amazonian forest, and he was presumed dead for many years. So it's interesting that this was chosen before they went to show Roger Wakefield, because his father, we find out later, was a pilot in World War II when his plane disappeared.
Nicely done.
And you can also make a connection with Claire, perhaps. The Wikipedia description says that her husband is, quote, presumed dead for many years, unquote. And in episode 25... of the Avengers, Forget Me Not, also an interesting title given the flowers from episode 101. There is a newspaper with a headline, quote, Peter Peel alive, air ace found in Amazonian jungle, wife Emma waits. But the camera first goes to Roger at the manse. So there's a connection with a man, fighter pilot basically, or a pilot being lost,
right,
which is connection to Roger. Mm-hmm. And then there's a man, forget how he's lost, who's presumed dead.
Correct.
And not dead. And we see a flash at the end of 213 that Jamie didn't die. That's quite a little ingenious. My guess is that Matt chose that, but it's very possible. Or, I mean, Ron could have chosen it, but as far as the writers go.
Or Tony.
Tony could have. I just have a feeling it was Matt or Ron. But you know what?
Could very well be.
I haven't listened to the podcast yet, so I do not know.
Right. So before you go on, I do want to point out that I noticed that all of the children were, I'm assuming it's all the kids that showed up for the wake, and the kids don't want to sit and be bombarded with the sadness. So they put them all in the room and they were all watching The Avengers. Did you see the one kid who was in shorts?
No.
Like, it was a scene and everyone is dressed because it's Scotland and it's cold. So everyone is in like long pants, sweaters, jumpers, jackets. There's one child in that opening scene who I swear to you was wearing shorts. And I was very concerned for him.
So what did you think about Fiona? I thought she was
way too mousy.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so I thought, well, as in mousy looking?
As in
or acting.
All of the above.
Because I thought she was believable to a certain extent, but I don't think she was angry or not that the book Fiona's angry, but she wasn't decisive enough. She wasn't full on flirty enough.
No. Book Fiona was plump and buxom and actively trying to catch herself a man.
Yeah. A husband.
That was Book Fiona. So when this Fiona showed up with like her hair not really done and she just it was not the and I know that I live tweeted this. I was just like, oh, okay, well, she's mousier than I thought. Perhaps the adaptation version of Fiona is not trying to land herself a husband. And then Fern on Twitter came back and said she's like Dobby, the house elf from Harry Potter. And
like
I
my
died.
Cat, Couscous, who looks, I'll have to post a picture one day. I haven't been able to, I have to get her looking at me, pull her ears back and her eyes go wide. Like
so it's not
will.
Like she actually looks like Dobby. It's when you just squeeze
it's
her
only
face.
Only when she looks like a mix. Well, this is not me thinking she looks like this person, but because, and I swear I'm not making this up, go Google it. It was a thing a few years ago, but there was a big to do, at least in Russian media, that Dobby looked like Putin. They were complaining.
Okay.
People complained. So anyway, I don't look at my cat and say, hey, it's Couscous. I mean Putin. I mean Dobby. No. When I do the thing with pulling her ears back and holding them back, and her, you know, of course, it makes her eyes, her head go back and her eyes look wild.
PETA is legitimately going to boycott our podcast now.
No, she's fine. The thing is, I can't get it to stay and take a picture. So I've never been able to get it. And then when I do get one, she's like that. I mean, sideways. But anyway, my cat looks like Dobby, pretty much not like Putin. I think Dobby, you could make a legitimate, not argument, but like a joke. I can kind of see the resemblance and see what people mean. But my cat versus Dobby, definitely.
My point being that Fern said she looked like Dobby the house elf. And I said, someone get her a sock and set her free. So we kind of jumped past and went straight to Fiona. But I do think we need to give a warm welcome to our Roger Wakefield one, Richard Rankin.
Now, in the books, the Reverend has already passed when Claire and Brianna come.
Yes.
There's no wake going on.
For sure.
Okay. So Roger, at this wake, Roger toasts the Reverend. And Claire, who is in attendance, is kind of in the back.
He toasts it with a toast the Reverend picked out himself.
So obviously he doesn't spot Claire. He's not looking for Claire. Well, he doesn't know of her.
I barely spotted Claire. Like,
yeah.
Because it was like her in the background with a bunch of other people in front. So she was just kind of like filling in. And it's like I knew she was going to be there to a degree. But I still, because, you know, I'm used to Clara. She's been the rest of the season. I was not expecting Jackie O'Clair to make her appearance in this
episode.
That's
a very good way to put it. That was straight up Jackie O'Clair.
Oh, for sure. Now,
what are we going to call her? Jackie Clarinassus?
Nope.
Claire Jacknasses?
No, you're bad at this. You need to just
help
stop.
Me then.
Just call her Claire.
No, we got to come up with a cute theme. Name.
Clary O.
We could add an O. Claire O. Randall.
No.
Clary O.
It's not getting better.
It's actually better. Jackie O. Clary O. We'll call her Clary O. Clary. Chloriel.
No, we'll move on.
Jackie O. Nasses Claire. Actually, no. Sorry, Jackie O'Clair.
Oh, well, she is Jackie on. O. My point is
Jackie Kennedy. Claire.
Her poor hair in this episode was so tortured within an inch of its life. Like, I never thought that I would think that the other two decades eras were kinder to her hair until I saw the 60s. Like, her hair looked strangled and tortured. The only, like, when she was inside, and I think it had to do with the fact that there was no elements involved, but Culloden, her hair was awful.
Brutalized.
It was so awful. Like, it just was like, oh, the 60s were not kind to Claire's hair. So, but I mean, I didn't notice it as much in the first scene, but it felt like it progressively got worse as the episode went on.
Claire's there. We barely see her. He doesn't notice her, obviously, at first. Because he doesn't remember this. He has to be reminded later on. But he does spot a young Bree, an older Bree, and has to go talk to her.
But wasn't it weird, though, that she said to him, are you Roger Wakefield? Was she not there for the toast?
I don't think she may have not been in the room.
Because Claire
she was
wandering
there. Around. She seemed to be like, not snooping, but just like, this is not ours. As soon as we can leave, we're going to leave. She wasn't necessarily bored, but it was like, you know, she didn't know the Reverend. She didn't know Roger. She didn't know anybody there. She's only there with her mom. She's like, you know.
I just thought it was strange that they were in this house and he gave this like toast to the Reverend's death, if you will. And she's like, oh, are you Roger Wakefield? I feel like you would have known because you were there in the house and he's the one giving the toast at the funeral. So that was strange.
So Claire and Bree are there. As we said, Claire looks amazing. Her makeup and dress are superb. Now, what do you think exactly? Like, make me a short list. What did they do that you noticed to age her?
Crow's feet.
I'm so glad someone else said that. And of course, the little gray streakies in the hair.
Yeah.
Just up front.
But it was weird. Okay.
Just up front.
Which is appropriate. However, in the books, Claire was described as having like hair, like
shot Joseph's through with wisps,
like Joseph's coat of many colors. So she supposedly had every color of the rainbow, light brown hair or brown hair. So in the books, if I'm not mistaken, it was described as it just kind of was lightened. So it didn't really look gray. It was just like every bit of it was kind of lightened in aspect to what it was normally. So for her to have such definite streaks of gray was kind of jarring to me.
A little jarring.
But I get it. They were aging her in the ways that they could. But they stayed true to the book in which Claire was well put together. Like she kept it firm and tight. Like
now and she, what was her age? Remember? She went back at 28, right?
Is it 28 or 27?
Either. Let's just say 28. She was there for 3 years. That's 31. It's now 20 years later. Or 19 years later, she's about 50 or 51.
Like I said, she still looks amazing.
Oh, exactly. So it's not, for some reason, I always thought she was like 48. No, she's like at least 50. Mm. I am not as willowy as Katrina. That's not what I mean. But if I look like skin wise and like face wise, like the skin, you know, crow's feet, even the dude, I'll take her crow's feet at 50.
Yeah.
Dude, that's all.
I can't wait to see how they age Jamie.
Oh, I'm so excited. See, now we got like a full on sneak peek of aged Claire.
Right.
And that'd be so much fun.
Redheads do not gray like that. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with his mane of red hair and how long it is.
I have to go back to the crow's feet. I'm so happy you mentioned that because I watched it a few times and I know I noticed the little bit, the little lines next to her. So I noticed a difference or I noticed the change, but I haven't heard or seen a lot. Now I have not engaged in any conversation about this because I wanted to save it for our discussion, but I haven't heard a lot of mention of the crow's feet. Like I even had to double check like a few times, like double take, like, wait, yeah, I see the difference. Is that like a spackle? Like something you put on the skin, which kind of tightens it. You know what I mean? Like yeah. When it dries, it makes little wrinkles.
Yeah. I mean, they have all kinds of stuff you can get. I know that they have like scar kits where you put this, it's almost like a glue that you put on the skin and then it kind of tightens and puckers so that when you move the skin, it looks a specific way. I don't know exactly what they went with as far as, you know, makeup on the cast and crew did, but I thought it was effective.
Now, Roger finally puts two and two together regarding Frank Randall, the historian, and realizes that Claire is the widow of Frank. And he realizes who she is and what role, not that she had a role in his life, but that he had actually met her when he was much younger. We also find out, this just tickles me. We find out Claire is now a doctor and Brianna says actually a surgeon.
She's like, stop being modest. She's a surgeon.
Can I just take a little, a moment?
I can't stop. Okay, y'all, she's like bicycling in the air with her arms. Like,
Brie has a freaking standard, whatever-ish American accent. I'm just so happy they didn't go with Boston. And please don't send us any hate mail. I have nothing against Boston. I think it's I dig it. I dig the accent.
But it would have been distracting.
Well, not just that. It may have been more challenging for her, but that's beside the point. She would have, I just think in her, number one, her parents didn't have that. Although, yes, she grew up in Boston. So I see that evidence for it. But I think she would have got, didn't she? Like, she would have gone to, like, Catholic schools.
That was the argument I've heard from other people online, is that she was perhaps at boarding private schools.
If not boarding, I think private schools. But, yeah, and she would have been, like, if it was Catholic, it would have been, like, Irish or other types of nuns.
And she also has British parents. So, I mean...
Well, the parents definitely would not have given her that.
She would have started with a British accent at home. And then the minute they put her in daycare and or preschool and or she went to school is when it would have started becoming less British and more standard American. I tried really desperately to make my daughter have some sort of a weird accent and it did not work.
Well, you didn't send her to school in the UK.
I didn't, so. But I tried to pronounce things funny in front of her and it didn't work.
And Brianna is also a,
go ahead.
Brianna is also a history major.
She is. The one thing I did want to say before we move too much further than this, yes, Roger followed her through his house looking for her because he was like, oh, who's that? But part of me was like, is it more, oh, she's good looking. What is she doing here? As opposed to, this is my dad's wake. Who's this freaking stranger hanging out in my house? I mean, the odds of there being people in this town that he doesn't know showing up for his dad's funeral is pretty slim. So I think that it would have been equal parts, hey, she's good looking, and hey, who are you and why are you in my house?
We find out also that Mrs. Graham has passed and Fiona is her granddaughter. Now Fiona comes up to Roger and she lays it on. This is like as strong as she gets, right? She lays it on, and just before she leaves, she does give Bri a look like, who do you think you are, American twat?
I didn't get twat, personally. I did get, as Ginger laughs at me, I did get her kind of showing up. And this was mentioned to me as well when I was saying she was really mousy and not apparently trying to get herself a husband. But she did act like she owned the place. And perhaps maybe a little bit owned Roger, because she was like, oh, she didn't use the words, but it was very much, oh, sweetie. Pay attention to your guests. It's time for them to go. Shouldn't you be saying goodbye to your friends? She did do some of that. And she, I feel like she was definitely way more comfortable in that environment than Mrs. Graham probably was. Like, she was, in that sense, yes, I think she was definitely trying to be lady of the manse to a degree. She was way more than a housekeeper than Mrs. Graham was. Like, Mrs. Graham knew her business, took care of her stuff, but she never was like, oh, Reverend, can I, maybe you should tell your friends it's time to go home. So, anyway.
I love that they have the Druid dance music as Claire is walking around the Reverend's study, and there's a voiceover, and she says something like, the ghosts were starting to chase her. Not that she was looking for stuff, but that they were coming after her. And this is a huge change from the book. The motivation for her looking for answers. In the book, like in the show, Frank did not want her to say anything to Brianna about her parentage, right? And in the book, like in the show, Claire does not look for answers or do anything about anything for 20 years. However, the reason is different. In the book, she agrees. She promises him she won't, as long as he's alive.
She, not even that. She just says she promised him. And that was reiterated in this episode.
I'm talking about the book only. She didn't tell you. She didn't say, Frank, when you die, I'm going to do this. But she promised him that she would not while he was alive.
In the book.
In the book. Yes. This is only the book now. And then once he passed, she pretty much made a hot mess. She made a hot beeline to find out stuff. She was completely motivated.
Not only a hot beeline,
but in the series,
it had nothing to do with a wake. They weren't just happening to be in London and heard about the Reverend's passing and came up for the wake. That's not what happened in the book. In the book, she basically, I think, went to Scotland to pay her respects and tell her daughter.
Absolutely.
That's what the book was about. Yeah.
100%, because, I mean, first of all, yeah, and in line with that, she's the one who told them. She came to the manse to find Roger, to give him a list and do a research project for her. Yeah. It was 100% Claire's doing.
Yeah.
100% Claire's doing. There was no wake. I mean, there may have been a wake earlier on, but she was never there.
On the page.
She was there like way after. She was there after he was dead and buried. And here, I mean, it's convenient. It's fine. I understand that they show the wake to, you know, kind of bring things together, and it's definitely a reason for her to be there.
It was a good introduction to Roger. Absolutely. And it did make sense for them to show up and be there, considering in the book, we opened the entire book with them on the doorstep, as opposed to the series.
It's just, I guess I'm a purist, and I'm really, really, really working here to like separate things. But again, maybe it was to give Brianna more FaceTime or more to do than just react and be whiny and upset or whatever with her mom at this, like, this whole unbelieving thing with her mom. Mm-hmm. I can get it. I'd be curious to know what their motivation was for that. But in the end, it's the same. In the end, they find out what they find out. Brianna comes to accept it. Roger comes to accept it. And she says she's going back. And we find out Jamie didn't die, or most likely didn't die, at least not at the battle. So in the end, it all comes together. There's kind of a bow. It's so weird. I don't think it necessarily makes Claire look weak, but I don't understand this huge change for why couldn't Claire. To me, it's more exciting that Claire's done stuff, right? If she had come to Roger and said, look, I'm here to give this to you, and then have her. In the TV show, she actually did explain things, but only after she was confronted, right?
Well,
she says, your father is so-and-so.
It's true. But in the series, she still wasn't looking for Jamie, honestly. So in the series, the only promise she made to Frank was that she would never tell Brianna. There was no time limit. There was no while I am still alive. That was in the books. The books, it was, you know, while I'm still alive, tell her nothing. The series, it was just promise me you won't tell her. And I'm her father. That's all that she'll ever know. So we didn't hear anything outside of that. So for the series, she was not actively trying to find Jamie. She still wasn't. But the fact that she went and found the deed of Sazine, dude, for real, that was like 20 years in the making, me learning how to pronounce that, by the way. Her finding that, to me, I don't know if that was for her to prove to herself that it happened, or if it was her banking it for later just in case. But she never, just like in the books, she was looking for other people from Lallyrock to see if they survived. She was not specifically looking for Jamie.
She wasn't looking for Jamie at all.
She was actively not looking for Jamie in the books.
Well, she knew, quote unquote, that he died. She was trying to find out what happened to the Lallybroch men that were supposedly saved. Remember?
Yes.
It was a list of those men, because she knew in her heart and in her mind, and because that wasn't what he planned, she knew Jamie had died. The only people that had a chance to survive were those who had been led away from the battle. And that was what Jamie's plan was.
I'm really just hoping like in the Murtaugh TV series. Led away. I mean it.
So yeah, it's a huge change. It doesn't change in the end. In the end, everything comes back the way it is. But, oh man, when you wait till the very last episode to do every ding-dong thing, I guess you have to make that change. I'm just glad they had the rat satire. They had some really cute things in there. So there's plenty, when they say that they were only there for the day and la la la, and he's like,
that equally was weird to me.
Of fruit that they're only there for the day?
Well, first of all, no, it's for... For sure. They're only there for the day. They're intending to go back to London that night. That's fine.
But then I'm glad they have your permission.
I know. That's fine. But then they stayed past when it's too late to leave, which is fine. And you know, Brianna's like, you know, he's like, oh, have you seen much of our country? And she's like, no, we just kind of drove up here and we're driving back tonight. And he's like, oh, it's a beautiful wild country. You should see it. And then they're like, oh, no, we're going to stay. We're going to drive as far as we can and then stay the night and then finish driving in the morning. Turned into, no, you should stay here, which also turned into, oh, I know where the guest room is. It's the top of the hall to the right or wherever it is, which then turned into, we're not just going to stay the night. We're going to stay for like a few days. Like her, I'm just staying because it's too late to drive back, very quickly became, let's stay for a few days, maybe longer than that. Like, did you see how quickly that went? I thought that was strange. Don't claim you're only staying for the day to come for a wake if you fully intend to stay for days. Days.
I don't think she intended to stay for days, but once she said she would spend the night, that turned into like 3 days.
For real, though. Like overnight, it became, we need to get back to London to family to, well, we're here. Let's see some more.
I want to know who that family was. Must have been Frank's family.
Must have been her family. Oh, right. Her family's dead.
Oh, wow. Someone of the two of us, and a hint, it wasn't me.
It was me.
Forgot that Claire was an orphan. Doesn't mean she didn't have, I mean, I guess.
She could have had uncles.
Well, her Uncle Lamb.
He could have also had other family.
I mean, I don't know. But whatever.
Well, it wasn't her French family.
So they do stay there.
That she was looking for in the first book.
But that night, Claire has a dram and Roger joins her. Roger mentions the Reverend's interest in Culloden, and we learn that Roger is actually a Mackenzie. His parents were Jerry and Marjorie Mackenzie. Now, when he mentioned his parents' name, I thought, A Leaf on the Wind of All Hallows. If you haven't read that, please. It will not spoil stuff for people, but it talks about something I just said. It's considered a bold, what Diana calls a bold, a small novella, or a small book, a novella.
I got a bold for you.
And Roger is really hit by the loss of the only father he's ever known.
Well, that's his family. He doesn't have, it's not like he has endless cousins. And it's the same with Claire.
I was about to say, he's like a Claire now.
Yeah. Oh, and then Bree was like, Scotland is a special place for both of my parents. And I thought to myself, you have no idea how special it is for both your parents.
So in the guest room, Bree is asleep and Claire looks at her and compares her to Jamie. And this is pretty much also from the book. A lot more condensed. But in the book, she talks about what she looks like and how close she looks to Jamie. Then we are whisked back into 18th century Scotland, April 16, 1746, the morning of the Battle of Culloden.
The beginning of the timestamps. Like, this is the episode of timestamps. And also, her stating, Claire stating, you're so much like him, is directly from the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I said. I know, I'm just saying, every time dialogue from the book, for me, outside of Faith was a very special episode that broke me from beginning to end. I didn't cry in this episode, really. But the times that I did get emotional about it were the times when they had dialogue from the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's what moved me when I was like, oh, they kept it. They loved it as much as me.
And there was one final attempt to stop the battle with the prince. And that didn't go so hotly. And so it's happening. There's only one thing left, Claire says, but she has to tell Jamie in private. Flash forward to 1968. I love the music here. Roger and Bree are gallivanting in the wild country. And they arrive at Blackness, or actually Fort William.
It's true. But to go back just like a hair, I love that, and this was before the first timestamp, I loved the fact that Roger is an excellent host. And when he found Claire drinking his whiskey, he drank with her. Because a good host never lets anyone drink alone. Ginger, you're a bad host.
I can't drink that much. If I drank every time someone I was around drank, I would never get off the floor. So it's cute that Roger was attempting, at least, to quote Nathan Hale to Bree.
Legitimately, I couldn't quote
this. No, wait. Didn't he say it was Ethan somebody?
He thought it was one of the Green Mountain Boys or one of the
Ethan
Mountain
somebody.
Boys. Yeah.
And
she's like, no, Ethan Allen. Nathan Hale.
There's like a furniture shop named Ethan Allen?
There is.
Oh, no. It's Ethan Allen and Associates. Maybe it's a lawyer, isn't it?
No, there is a furniture.
I am so messed up there. But anyway, yeah. So he tries to quote something to Bree, and it actually was Nathan Hale.
Oh, she called him on it. Like, she had no shame.
And this is the first time. It happened like twice. And I was not listening for this. But when I know the second time. I was not listening for this specifically. And she did Sophie, your American accent is pretty kick-ass, okay? But two times, I heard, it didn't break your line, but I heard a vowel stick out. So just a word. So I heard Sophie's accent, not break, but kind of heard it a little bit. One time, it was the first time that I am aware of it, and it could have happened before. And this is me being critical, was when they were walking at Blackness at Fort William, and she says the word historical, but instead of historical, it's a broad O, like historical, but you could, but I don't think they did that. I don't think they made this choice. You could argue that the Boston O is also historical, right? But it wasn't that Bostonian. So I don't think it was a choice because she didn't not all of her O's were colored in this way. No. I think it was a slip.
The word that I heard was later on in the episode.
I know what you're going to say.
When she said Miles.
Oh, that's not what I was going to say.
Yeah, well, no. She
what
said
is Miles? Miles?
Miles. But it was like Miles.
See, I didn't catch that.
And it, to me, it sounded like she, like for one instant, went like real Southern.
Ah.
Southern American.
Well, that's interesting. Because then the other thing that I caught that you didn't catch, apparently.
I might have.
Was anything.
Anything.
Instead of anything.
Yeah.
Americans don't say any. And the reason this popped out to me, and others may not have this background, but may have heard it, and like, bully for you, because it took me listening to this to have that be a standout to me. I listened to a lot of Eloisa James romance novels, audiobooks, and I forget the audiobook narrator's name, but it's one woman who does all of these books. And one word I had to get used to over and over was anything, anything, anything. I'm like, what the heck? Oh, it's anything. Got it. Anything. So it's like almost a schwa. Anything. So it's not pronounced like an E, like we would say anything. And that's what it was. I was like, oh, okay. Sophie dropped a British N.
But I could almost buy that because her mom is British.
Nope. You can buy it. I'm saying I don't buy it.
Well, I do.
That's fine.
Legitimately buy it because if you're brought up with somebody who has a specific pattern of speech,
then it would be consistent. You don't make choices.
Did she say anything at any other point in the episode?
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is she did other, I'm sure, Y sounds that would be E that weren't uh. And that could have been that combination of word. But if it was consistently said, then that was, I don't think it was a choice. I think it was her saying it. So I'm not trying to nitpick anything. Her American accent was fab. It was fab. I was just so happy she had an American accent. I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy.
I thought she was fabulous.
Oh, she was. I thought she was a pretty darn good Brie. I was very happy. I just can't wait. This is not really spoiling anything because I'm not giving any details, but I can't wait till a certain towel scene. If they have it. I mean, that specific one.
Pacific?
Specific. We know they don't
know what?
Do.
Anything? Pacific. Pacific.
There you go. This episode is going to be called Anything Pacific.
Pacifically anything.
So it's touching how much Brie misses her father. It is. I mean,
clearly
she's the
only one,
too.
Though.
In the books, too. So I'm just so happy that they kept this. You can see how much she's struggling. She just lost her father. We don't know how long.
I don't know, but just. She's not struggling that hard.
No, she's not like bawling.
Yeah, it's not that new.
But she isn't convinced her mom is the best.
She's
at pretty much anything.
I mean, she legitimately says my mom lives in her own world.
Yep.
Which, I mean, that could mean many things.
Now, Roger says about Fort William and that, like,
did you notice her
place
shoes?
They were standing. Yeah, the boots.
She was in, like, heels. He's a terrible guide. Who invites her to go to
trying to make her look taller?
Well, they are trying to make her look taller. Cause
she's already 5'7 or 5'8.
Yeah, but they're trying to make her look closer to, I think.
His height?
His height, which is, you know,
poor Sophie.
Specific.
She's
going to
be like in 3-inch heels the next.
However,
boots, the next
my point is
seven
she was
years.
In very tall shoes, and I don't think that Roger's shoes could have been any flatter, but they put her in these very tall shoes walking on those cobbly stones, and we were there. We were at that, what is it, Blackness Castle or whatever it's called. We were there, and that, it's treacherous. Mm-hmm. Like, those cobbles are unforgiving. So for them to make her be in those shoes walking around there, I thought was cruel and unusual.
Roger says there was a lot of blood spilled there. And just FYI, Brie, including your father's. Now, Claire.
No, but then she says, oh, this place gave me the chills. And I was like, welcome to Scotland, my friend. Everywhere will give you the chills because it's cold.
Claire driving to Lallybroch, Jamie and Claire theme, full on. I totally remember this. Do you, Sam? That, I mean, as she comes up to Lallybroch, seeing.
I was like, wait, what am I supposed to remember?
Mid-Hope.
Oh, yeah, I totally remember that. But
and when she went to the steps, I was like, we took a selfie there.
I wanted to post it. Okay, that was you. The one thing I will say about that is that online, when I was live tweeting on Saturday, Diana posted about, well, actually Katrina posted first about saying that she mentioned to Terry that she wanted some glasses for that scene. And Terry immediately had like an entire box of glasses to choose from. Like she's just like, oh, here's some glasses. And Diana came back and said, what are you going to do about it? Is she going to take those back through the stones with her? She's like, because, you know, it's the domino effect of adding glasses now. And I think I retweeted it and I was like, oh, that's true. And somebody came back and said, yeah, but there's such a cute scene between Jamie and Claire about her needing glasses. I said, yeah, but that's like 3 or 4 books from now. So she doesn't need glasses for quite some time. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that, because book Claire didn't need glasses, not for a good long time.
That's true.
Butterfly effect, people. Be careful. But I love her in glasses, but yeah.
They're super cute.
It's not for a few years.
But, you know, consistency-wise, it's not practical to travel back through the stones with 60s glasses.
And I also love, it's not just the theme as she is, the Outlander theme, as she's getting out of the car or driving, but it's also, there's a variation on the Outlander theme as she's walking around Lallybroch. Oh, man, so beautiful. And she hears the voices of the Frasers and the Murrays, and she hears Jamie's voice. Jamie shows up in that arch and she puts her hand to her lips, that thing where she goes like this.
Yeah.
Or whatever she did. So beautiful. And then, of course, she's saying the Dami Basia Mile poem in English.
The Catalyst poem.
And their theme is all over the place here. And it's with the choir. It's so, actually, yeah, it's the choir. It's so, so sad and so beautiful. And then we're transported back to 1746.
Like, what's with the snapping? I felt like I was just part of some weird hypnotist show.
Claire and Jamie go into a house or into some abode to discuss the killing of Charles. And she recommends the yellow jasmine. And then Jamie learns that Colm took his own life. And she describes just how easy it could be to kill the prince.
How did we not speak about the fact that the Bonnie Prince Charlie had his final Mark Me of the season? It was legitimately, like, I thought we had it in the last episode that he was in, but this was the last Mark Me of the season. Also, he got real Christy in this episode. Like, he got some Christ complex going on. Like, he was definitely identifying with Jesus real hardcore with Jamie earlier. With his whole, you're my Thomas. You doubt me until I show you proof. And I'll show you proof by the end of the day. And I was like, dude, you need to calm down.
I'll show you my holes.
It's not. Please don't.
I meant as a prince. Yeah. Summer.
Ginger.
Back in the 60s, or forward in the 60s, Roger and Bree stop for lunch and discuss a, quote, incident. There's some kind of, she asks him if there was some kind of major incident that her parents were involved in or something happened. And Roger says there was a time that he remembers when Mrs. Graham was crying and Frank had smashed things up. And this is back in 47 or 48. So,
oh, I vividly remember when he smashed up that.
Oh, heck yeah. And so Roger then is about 28, because there had been some question, and I wasn't even 100% sure. There was some question, I think, on Twitter or Facebook about Roger's age at the beginning or in DIA.
Well, and in the book, he was a professor, was mm-hmm. he not? So it wasn't that he was just, because I felt like in the series, it seemed to me that he was saying that he was a student at Oxford. Did I misinterpret that?
I don't think he was a student at Oxford. And we learned that Bree is a snoop. She broke into her father's lockbox and she found some letters from the Reverend. And we find out they were pen pals over the years. The Reverend mentioned some incident with Claire and Frank. And this is what Bree's asking about. She's wondering if Roger knows something. So Bree has known for a long time that something was up. Roger suggests they look through the Reverend's papers. And Bree doesn't mind getting grubby, she says.
Awkward convo. You haven't seen my room. Oh, okay.
So Claire visits some kind of records office, it looks like. Yes. And this is where she gets a copy of the deed of
Sazine. But can we say how easily she got all those things? And maybe that's just because of the time period. Because like today, like if you tried to go and get a copy of anything, A, they would not just give you a copy. Like you would have to request it. Like you'd have to go in there saying, I would like a copy of. It's not just, oh, you wanted to see that? I went ahead and made you a copy. No one's that nice here. Also, did anyone think it was like a little creepy that she was like, I want to do genealogical research on this dude. I'm just going to give you somebody's name and then you do genealogy for him. Can you do that? Can you just look somebody else's stuff up? But I mean, that just
probably
seems like
1960s.
I guess
much more trusting.
I guess.
And of course, the deed has Jamie's signature and her signature and Myrta's.
And doesn't it's have her signature because it looks like Claire Beecham Frogger.
And it's the title for Lallybroch. The Murrays had kept the property for a while, we learn. And then, as Summer said, she requests a genealogical search for Roger McKenzie. Back at the manse that evening, Claire teases Bree about her attraction to Roger. And Claire freaks out a bit about their Fort William visit. And Bree accuses Claire of not loving Frank. But what's new? Not that. I mean,
Well, she did at one point, but that was all pre-Jamie when she loved him.
Back in the 18th century, on the day of the Battle of Culloden, Jamie and Claire discuss the murder of the prince, and we find Dougal is around the corner, lurking. Ross comes in to let Jamie know that they're ready. What, ready to fight? Ready to go? What exactly was that?
Huh?
When Ross comes in to tell Jamie they're ready. Ready to what? Take the men to Lallybroch?
Clearly no. Probably ready for Culloden.
Maybe. I don't think it was that, but it was, I'm sure it had to do with the battle. So as they plan the application of the tincture and how to get it done, Dougal comes in and starts calling them vicious names.
Well, and in the book, it was Claire similar. Does suggest it. And almost immediately, they both Jamie decide that it doesn't work, that it would not be.
But Jamie is, okay, in the TV show, he freaks out too. But then he starts kind of going along with it like, well, are you sure? Da, 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 da. And she's more convincing. But you're right. In the books, they both pretty much quickly come to the realization or the decision that it's too dangerous. Well, or he just can't do it.
For sure. But for me, that almost made the whole scene with Dougal afterwards more tragic.
In the book.
I agree. 100%. They weren't going to do it.
Exactly.
They agreed not to do it. But all Dougal heard was her suggesting it. And that's all he needed to judge, jury, execution her and try to, you know, end the whole thing.
Absolutely. It was still extremely tragic in the TV show. But
it was tragic in new and unfortunate ways.
But it was more poignant and sad. It was sad, period. But in the book, it's like there was no need because we weren't going to do it.
Right.
You didn't listen. You won't listen. And he still wouldn't listen in the TV show.
No.
But it was different because they were talking about how to do it.
It's true. But that's true to form for Dougal is that he's very hard-headed. Once he gets anything into his brain, good luck trying to get him off that course. So once he made his decision that Claire was a demon and a witch and a whore and that Jamie was complicit in it and they both needed to die and that was the only thing that would fix what he'd just seen, it was just done. You couldn't stop him.
Forward in 1968, Roger goes to meet some students, and Brianna was that like a library?
No, it was like
some kind of like the campus, maybe like some meeting room.
It seemed to me like it was like a common area, like
yeah,
it was
like a union or something.
Maybe like it almost seemed like he's like, I'm gonna go up and meet these people up in that area, and she's like, I'll just hang out here. It almost seemed like
a student center.
Yeah, like a student center.
So Roger goes to meet some students and Brianna wanders around. And whom does she run into but Miss Jillian Edgars? Yay, Lotte! She is with a society called the White Roses of Scotland. And this is our Galas before she goes back.
Our Galas before Galas. And I thought to myself, as ever, she is equal parts gorgeous and a bag of nuts. Like she is still a little crazy. Like when she first said, I am Bonnie Prince Charlie, I went, oh, that's not going to go over well. But then she continued and said, you are. And I was like, okay, that's where we're going with that.
So Bree looks understandably a little bit skeptical at this. And after the talk, and she goes up to talk to her, Bree calls out some historical facts to Jillian. She introduces herself to her. And I wrote, remember this. She introduces herself to Jillian. She introduces herself to Jillian. And Roger introduces himself to her. Remember this. So we can't say anything more. But down the road, as many things do happen or do end up in Outlander, you might remember something that will jog your memory 100 years down the road.
Right. So
or 100 years before.
The thing that struck me about this scene is the innocence of Jillian Edgars. Because this is pre-Galus Jillian. So she does not have all of the life experiences that Galus did when we encountered her in the past.
Maybe pre-jaded Galus. Because she becomes Galus as soon as she goes back.
It's true, but we don't see her
that
at all.
Pre-Galus that we know.
This is pre-Stones Galus. So I think if you look at it, like this version, and it was funny because I was trying to tweet about it and I was like, past future Galus as opposed to future past Galus. So this is past future, and then future past is the one
just
we
call her 1960s Galus.
Right. Is the one we meet in season one. But it's almost like she not digresses. She devolves a little bit, because in the past future, when she's in the 60s, she is very open to other people having other opinions. Like, it doesn't affect her. It doesn't make her mad. She doesn't want to poison them. She just kind of says, oh, well, that's true. However, let me cite reasons why that's not the truth. Whereas, as I stated, Galus of the past of the 1740s would just poison you. Mm-hmm. So I think it's almost like reverse growth for her character.
Claire is at Culloden, and she's in like the whatever would have been the visitor center at that time. And I wrote, tell us how you really feel, Claire. She is all kinds of like that princess. No, 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 no. And then a visitor over in this little display case sees this piece of amber, but announces, say, oh, it's a dragonfly. And she kind of does she's a little turn. She's like, oh, well then.
Diana's post this week about the book version of the ending versus the series ending was hysterical to me, because she was like, so wait, you're going to take out the visceral visual of I want
a hunk of chunk of something.
Right, with like the ugliest wedding present. Yeah. Was hysterical.
So back in the 18th century, poor Dougal, Jamie did not want to kill his uncle. He is family. He's what's left of his mother's kin, of course, besides himself and Jenny and their kids. And he helped raise him. But there was no alternative. Not because they had to get rid of him, but because he was going to kill one or both of them.
Oh, his intention was to kill them both, I'm sure.
In the book, it was Claire. He was like, look, let me kill her and have it done. But I think in the series, it could have been both.
So a big change from the book, I think, is that Claire participated in Dougal's demise.
Huge change.
Which I thought was incredibly appropriate, mostly because in the book, it felt like it was a really fast scene. Like, it seemed like it just happened and it was very quick. The way that they played it in the series, it was kind of drawn out. And it would have been strange to me if Claire had just sat in the sidelines and watched the whole thing go down without participating. So personally, I thought it was a nice touch. I thought it made her more accountable for that particular eventuality, if you will. So I actually enjoyed it. I know some people weren't fond of it, but I thought it made sense. And I thought it made way more sense to have her participate than to just sit and cower under a desk while the two people fought and she did nothing.
And it's also kind of in line with, even though it's Dougal and not BJR, she had said at least two times in the television series that she would help Jamie bleed Randall. So Claire's got a bit of a sharp side to her, yeah. When it comes to her man. So forward in the 1960s again, Bree and Roger are in the Reverend's storage area searching for his journals. And of course, this is where we get the rat satire. What did you think about it? I thought it was sweet.
I thought it was good. I was concerned only because in live tweeting on Saturday, after one of our listeners suggested that I do more rapping in this episode, and I said no, because I didn't intend to rap in the last episode, that it was left in. She said...
Which she was actually okay with people.
Was I?
Girl, you went on.
I bet. I know, but that was because you told me you would delete it. Anyway, my point is...
And then I said I wasn't, and you said, okay.
I don't remember that. You must have edited that part out, because I believe all I said was, no! Anywho.
It was... I think I also said, Summer, this is good. It was... This is too good. I have to leave it.
Too embarrassing. Anyway, it was then suggested that perhaps one of us should do a rat satire for the episode. And I was like, oh, hell no.
I can do a cat satire.
Do it now.
Except that I don't want to get the cats away. I want them to come to me.
Okay, then do it right. Oh, cats, ye are too plenty.
Unfortunately, I do not have 20.
Oh, thank God you don't have 20. Oh, my God. You're already a cat lady.
Okay. What?
I'm just saying, if you had 20, you would be like a super cat lady.
That would be a cat lady. I have 2. That's not cat lady. 2?
I mean, it's like a
cat. Are you guinea pig lady? It's You've like got a, 3.
Not for long. It's like a cat lady starter set.
Okay, maybe. I can go with that if I didn't stop. But I stopped like 8 years ago.
But you want more, don't you?
Oh, God, no.
Summer, every time you
I
see,
am,
every time you see pictures of kittens, don't you?
I would love to be around them and love on them, but I'm happy with having 2. Because they keep each other company, even though they're...
They hate each other.
They don't hate
You're
each other.
You're never here. You're not here when the when
Because someone has 12-hour freaking days. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
The point is, they're not well-matched. I love them. They're not well-matched.
They're well-matched when all they have is each other. When they have other humans around.
When all they have is each other.
Buzzy goes on her own, and Kiva curls up on your face.
When they have nothing else, they're well-matched.
There are times still in this home that we share that I'll come in my bedroom... And I'll see that they're on the bed quite close to each other. Admittedly, it's typically in winter
for warmth
when it's cold.
Okay.
But hey, they don't hate each other. They're just definitely different temperaments. So they find a letter with Randall on it.
They found a box with Randall on it.
Yes, but it started with the letter, I think.
No, it was the box. And then they opened the box and found all the stuff inside of it.
But I wrote, they find a letter with the word Randall on it. So they did find a box, but I think they found, or at least there was a letter with the word Randall in it. The Reverend was doing some kind of research on Captain Randall, and Frank told him to stop work on the project.
He's not who I thought he was.
Back in the 18th century, Rupert walks in and sees what's happened with Dougal and the two. Jamie asks for 2 hours, just 2 hours, to see his wife safe and to take care of some things before he returns to answer for his killing of Dougal. Now, if I'm not mistaken, in the book it was 1 hour.
I thought it was 2 hours.
In the book?
I'm pretty sure it was 2 hours.
Can you please look it up?
I can, I guess. You're right. He said 1 hour. He says, I need 1 hour, man.
I'm telling you, I got a memory for freaking... I don't make it up. I can be wrong, but I have memory for numbers and dates.
Until it's proven, you're making it up.
No, because I've gotten so... I usually get things right, numbers-wise.
That being said, the amount of things that Jamie can accomplish in 2 hours...
Is even better.
Is still more than I could accomplish in like a full day. Like... All of the things, he's like, I'm going to get the deed of Stacey.
He's not distracted by phones and technology like we are. So back in the 60s, as Claire walks through Culloden, actually outside the battlefield, we hear Frank's voice describe the battle. And this is from season 1, episode 1, I believe. Claire tells a woman that she is a Fraser when she asks her at that Fraser stone. And Claire finally gives her goodbye to Jamie. She doesn't cry. And she tells him of their child. This is a heartbreaking scene, especially it with is. No tears.
But can we also speak to the fact that it took her an entire evening to recount 2 years of her time in the past?
3 years.
But she recounted 20 years of memories and the sun was not even down. She's apparently gotten much better at Cliff's Notes versions of things.
So she was angry at Jamie for making her leave him. She didn't want to live that life without him. But she says he was right. Thanks to him, Brianna was safe and loved and raised well. But she reminds her so much of him. Quote, because I love you, she says. So though she left him, she saw him all the time in her daughter. She tells him everything. And then she tells him goodbye. Finally. And their theme here is big time. And I'm about to get a tear prick. I haven't said that word in a long time. Aww, she says,
I was hoping you'd never say it again.
She says, quote, rest easy, soldier.
It was a callback to season 1 and season 2. The first one was on your feet, soldier. And then it was, what was the next one? Remember. It was another something, something soldier. And this final one of rest easy.
And back at the manse, Bree finds a newspaper clipping of the photo when her mom was back in the hospital after coming back. And it turned up after disappearing when she turns up after disappearing 3 years. It turns up 3 years after she comes back, after she disappears. You all know what I mean. So Brianna confronts Claire about this. And did she see? She asks her, you know, what are we actually doing here? Did you go out to meet my father?
Yeah, that was strange. That was different than the book.
A lot different.
Can I ask you a question, though? Mm-hmm. Because I saw a lot of contention about this online with people stating the difference in the book. The book, it was definitely a 3-year period. Mm-hmm. And then in the series, it was a 2-year.
Not 2 years. It was more than two, but maybe not quite three.
Right. But it was not three. But in this episode, they were back to talking about three, that it had been 3 years missing. She's looking at me like I should have said more, and that's
so
all
I have. Comes back the same time because it's the battle. That can't be changed. Right. But she goes back almost 6 months later, like between May. It's in the book, it's Beltane, and then she lives on Samhain. So that's about 5 months, right? So May.
Something like that.
May, June, July, August, September, October. Yeah, actually 6 months. So it's almost exactly 6 months. So it's it's 3 years in the book. Almost, it's like 2 years, and it's 2 weeks short of 2 years. So basically, in the books, it's 2 years. Fudge. In the books, it's 2 weeks short of 3 years.
Okay.
In the series, it's almost exactly 2.5 years. 2 weeks short of 2.5 years.
And I would also like to state that the reporter of that article and I have a severe differing of opinion on what rags are.
Oh my gosh.
She came back in like one of the most pristine historical outfits I've ever seen. And he's like, she showed up wandering the road in rags. Not rags.
Also different from the book. In Dragonfly, Claire, as we already hit up on this earlier, Claire tells the story in Dragonfly and Brianna freaks out. Here, she still freaks out, but it's not Claire's story to tell. It's almost like she's confronted with something. Now, she does tell her story, but Brianna's like, I don't want to hear this shizzle. So Roger has found something else, but he hesitates. And Bree says Roger is to stay in the room when she's like, you know, we may want to just have some privacy here. And Bree's like, no, you're going to embarrass yourself in front of this new person.
No, she's like, he's my friend.
Yeah, of like 2 days. So Roger convinces Bree to stay at a point when she's like, I've had enough of this. I'm not listening to your fairy tales and you're just going to stop. So he actually, it's good that he's there because he gets her to stay. He reminds her that she wanted to hear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the ugly truth. Back in the 18th century, on the day of the Battle of Culloden, Jaime tells Myrta
that, I'm not surprised.
About killing Duel.
Like, I figured it was going to happen eventually.
They prep the deed of
Saisine.
Why can I not say that? We Fergus is to take it to Lallybroch. That was hard. That was not as hard as the end, but that was a hard goodbye to watch Fergus. Especially if you know what happens to the boy. And dude, his eyes, those curls, he is going to be, he's already a looker. I mean, he's quite young, obviously. That's like child, yeah, I can't go there. But he's going to be a looker. That's all I'm going to say. When he's legal, I can start saying things.
I wish he wouldn't. It'll still be creepy.
It will be. So back in the 60s or forward in the 60s, she tells them, and Brianna doesn't believe her, of course, when Claire's voice breaks when she says, Bree's just like him, that was hard to hear. I was so surprised that Claire did not slap her daughter when she throws the F word at her face.
Oh, she threw the F word right back at her.
I know that, but I would have slapped that face. You do not talk to your mom like that. You do not talk to your mom like that. Brianna's heart breaks when her mother tells her that Jaime was the love of her life. She doesn't like that her mom is telling her this stuff. She doesn't like the whole time travel. She's like, Mom, you're like, you're cuckoo. Well, but she believes that she was in love. The reason that's important that her heart breaks is not because she's like, oh, my mom is so sentimental. No, it's because she wasn't in love with her father. You could tell Brianna's face. She knew there wasn't a perfect relationship there. And we find out much more later. But her voice, her heart breaks. I think you can see in her face when her mom tells her that I was so in love. The love of my life was not your dad. Even when we were happy together, it was not your dad. So that has to be hard for anyone to hear.
I'm sure. But I think that Claire had a willing audience. people that were willing to listen to her story up until she said Culloden. Oh. Then they were like, wait, what?
And then when Brianna says, two people know the truth, and one of them is dead. Too bad it wasn't you.
Ouch, dude.
I know. I was like, dang. That's not quite as much as throwing the F, throwing the F word in your mom's face as a verb that she did. But not quite slap worthy, but whoa.
I would rather my daughter throw the F bomb into my face than tell me she wished I was dead.
Perhaps, but it's not just expressing, throwing the F word out. First of all, okay, I'm not saying I never use it, but I think it depends on the situation. You're not saying like, mom, it was an effing party, or mom, he was an effing a-hole. That's using it descriptively. If you're saying to your mom's face, you were effing someone, or you were effing da-da-da-da while my dad da-da-da, no, not acceptable. Sorry, not acceptable. If you're using it in a conversation, like in describing something, where it's not aimed basically at someone, that's completely different than me accusing my mother of effing someone. That's just, for me, that's not excusable.
Well, I personally, again, would rather her accuse me of effing someone than tell me she wished I was dead.
I don't think they're either good, but one is a strong opinion that's hurtful, and the other is not appropriate to ever. It's the way you address it. You can say, mom, I wish you were dead, or I wish it was dad who was alive. That's not, that's hurtful. That's maybe not mean, but that's hurtful. It's how you feel, and it hurts, but it's not ugly. It's an ugly thing to say, but it's not said with, I'm sorry. We'll have a difference of opinion. I get it, but that's fine. This is how I feel. So back in the 18th century, when Jamie gives the deed to Fergus, he says, mon fils, which means my son. Hmm. That also. And that, anyway, that goodbye to Fergus again. That was hard.
And of course, Fergus is always, I don't want to leave you.
But milord. Forward in the 70s. I mean the 60s. Man, I'm skipping. Roger and Bree are drinking at a restaurant. A pub, we find out. And he points out that the deed of
Cezanne
looked authentic. And he has something that the Reverend thought was important. But we don't yet quite find out what that was. Also, Brianna doesn't like whiskey in the books, and here she does. So
yeah, I noticed that
another
too.
The good thing about the change is I don't think it affects the storyline. The bad thing about the change is, again, so needless. It's just not, you know, especially when I'm not compliant, I'm not an eyeball person, but especially when things are out of your control, like eye color, right? Dude, you get the actress and she doesn't have blue eyes, go for it. Claire didn't have Claire didn't have whiskey eyes. Her daughter, funnily enough, has whiskey eyes, but it's all good. We understand it's an adaptation and it's a character and blah, blah, blah. But dude, you have complete control over whiskey. What the freak? I just say what the freak, whatever. Doesn't make sense, but
holla. I mean, it doesn't change her as a character
no.
to have
it
her
doesn't.
Enjoy whiskey.
No, it doesn't. But and it's just needless. That's all. It's needless.
It's true, but I feel like it's such a small thing that if anything, it identifies her more with her dad. Like one more thing that
with her mom. Her mom's a lush.
Always.
Oh, you mean, wait, Frank her dad or Jamie her dad?
Jamie her dad. It's the little characteristics that she has that are deep and indicative of her father. And not just her father, but also her mother. That one is her father and
I
mother. But
never thought about this until just now. I am curious in further seasons if we see some Brie tics, meaning her shoulder moves. I wonder if I didn't look for any. I wonder if she'll do like shoulder things like Jamie does, or little finger twitches like Jamie does. I'm just curious what she'll bring to the character. Claire finds the program for that event that she had gone to for Jillian Edgar's at the talks. And she goes to the Edgar's residence. The place looked actually quite nice. Nothing like the pigsty from the books.
Well, he still looked like an alcoholic.
Yeah, but he was still put together. And you know that was little boy from Braveheart?
It was. Alcohol and years have not been kind to young William Wallace.
We learned that Jillian spends a lot of her time at the Institute, taking courses. At least there's that shout out to the books. And I understand because of time, blah, blah, blah. And because it didn't involve Roger, so it's just easier to get all this stuff done at once. Claire steals notebooks, Jillian's notebooks, that were actually at the house and not at the Institute. So there was no breaking in.
Correct. So she just has to get him liquored up till he passes out so she can steal.
Exactly. So Claire absconds with some of Jillian's notebooks and she flips through it quickly, one of them, and we see a picture of the stones that she had drawn. So Jillian finds Bree and Roger in the pub and she tells them, or we find out that she's leaving that night.
She's like, oh, you missed a really fun rally. She's like, sorry, I was too busy confronting my adulterous mother.
And you're never going to see me again. So too bad, so sad. Claire reads the notebooks and she reads all about what Jillian had written about the art and science of time travel. Now, she had studied and prepared for her journey, unlike Claire, of course. And she thought that you needed a human sacrifice to let you go through the stones and gemstones to guide you. And this is the first mention of gemstones as applied to TT. Now, 18th century, Jamie's telling Myrta to get the Frasers of Lallybroch away. Okay, that's important, potentially. Jamie will take Claire to the stones and then come back to fight, and Myrta will fight by his side, he says. Forward to the 1960s, Brianna and Claire are in their bedroom. Now, Brianna says she doesn't want to argue, but wants to know more about Jamie Frasier. Not about time travel, though. Claire tells her he is tall, has red hair. Brian was his father's name, and he spoke French, played chess, had a sister named Jenny. And she says she'll tell her more over time, but that she did visit his grave near Culloden. And she says she didn't mean to fall in love with him. She tried everything she could to resist it. Roger, meanwhile, is at his desk, and Claire walks in. Claire finds out they, Roger and Brianna, had met Jillian Edgars. She tells them she wants to try to stop Jillian from going through the stones. Then she drops the Mackenzie bomb. If she stops Jillian, then Roger may not be born. And that's pretty much from the books. Maybe not exact wording, but that scene happened. Roger's game. If this is true, we have to stop her. Claire doesn't understand how Diana Gabaldon's time travel works. Roger is somewhat open-minded, and he says to find her, at least Jillian, at least to warn her. Roger tells Bree that this could be the chance they have to make Claire face her crazy.
Well, in the books...
And to see what Jillian says about it.
Right, but in the books... Roger was
somewhat believing,
predisposed to believe her. Like, he was like, there's too many things that are provable about this for it to not be true. Like, he seemed like he was on board almost from the beginning of the books.
Maybe not the beginning, but
yeah.
Back in the 18th century, Jamie and Claire begin to make their way to the stones. Jamie calls her out. He knows she's pregnant, and straight up lines from the book. He kept track of her courses in the middle of the war. He says, quote, "This child is all that will be left of me ever. Now we must go," unquote. Remember that promise that she made to him in Paris, that she would go back if something didn't work? Well, here you go. And she says to him, "You are my home." Another line from the book. And then he says, "Claire, there's no time." Interesting language choice, Jamie. Forward to the 1960s, someone is pouring gasoline over a body and then lights it. And as Roger goes up the hill, he says, "This must be an effing barbecue."
Well, she goes, "What's that smell?" Bree says, "What's that smell?" And he goes, "It smells like an effing barbecue," which was so
perfect.
Like, I laughed out loud. Like, the things that I expected and what I actually got from that scene was, it paid off real big. But I thought to myself,
you know, that's Tony. Again,
had to be. But I'm thinking to myself, I mean, she wrote those two episodes, so it makes sense.
Oh, but co-wrote this one. But yeah.
But it was, I was like thinking, oh, it's just like great, 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 however many great grandmother, just like grandson. So maybe effing barbecues run in the family.
Jillian is in 18th century garb. We don't see a really great shot of her and her head is covered. So that doesn't bother me. But we don't get a really great shot of her dress. But she runs toward the stone. Now, no idea if she heard Claire. In the book, we know that she heard her because she kind of turns her head, right? There is evidence that she heard Claire, if not saw her. I think it's just hearing her. Brianna, I love it. I love it. I love it. I got chill bumps. Brianna and Roger hear the buzzing. both of them. This is so important, you guys. We can't say anything more. But don't forget, Jamie could not hear anything, and thus he could not travel.
He also touched the darn stone and nothing happened. Well, so it wasn't exactly. Just that he couldn't hear it.
No. But it's two things. He couldn't travel, he couldn't hear, and he touched and nothing happened. But Brianna and Roger could both hear the buzzing. That's all I can say. So don't forget this. Brianna looks and finally believes. So here, Brianna is the Thomas. 18th century, they arrive at the stones, Jamie and Claire. And man, that view is beautiful. She stops on the outside of the circle. And I think it's just like the books. When they get up there, just before they enter the stone circle, she's like, I just can't. I'm not ready. Now she hears the buzzing of the stones. Jamie hears nothing. I'm not ready, Jamie. I'm not ready, she says. That is one of the saddest parts right there. He says, I'll find you, I promise. One of the most famous lines in the entire series, the line about 200 years of purgatory. It's so beautiful how he punctuates it with kisses. He doesn't just say the lines. He like stops at certain points and kisses her to say, look, this, what I promise you, I'm sealing with a kiss. This is going to happen. I will find you. So hearing those guns in the distance was so freaky, wasn't it? That was a great addition. Hearing the guns of the battle.
Mandy said to me, she said it sounded like the Hunger Games, and she kept expecting the thing to come up on the in the sky to say who had passed away.
Mandy. That was Dougal.
This was a while ago. It had to be somebody else.
So she gives him, I'm just going to have to say it, in this very, very romantic, sad, amazing moment, she gives him a chunk of amber.
Ugh, Lord.
Not a fan of this change, but whatever. And he is so Jamie here. And here he gives her his father's ring. It has a ruby in it. Remember that in episode 201 when she appears and she's digging through the ground and she finds the ring and it was a flat top, right? There was no ruby in it. There was nothing.
Yeah, right? The stone had burned away.
Well, we don't know that yet, but
it was missing. It was gone.
It was gone.
It looked burned.
Yeah, it looked singed. That definitely looked dark. But my point is, we now know that he gave her a ring with a ruby, some kind of stone, and that in episode one, after she went back, she didn't have it.
Right.
What I want to do, and a lot of people have tweeted about this, what I want to do is watch the end up until that point.
And then start the next.
And then start the first one, episode. Because I want to see it. I mean, I want to see how cohesive it is. I'm sure it's fine, but that would be, like, I'd be bawling. Because episode 201, don't get me wrong, it was sad. But I wasn't bawling or anything, partly because I was in the middle of probably 1,000 people watching it. And I definitely
got choked up watching 201. I got 201. Choked up,
but like, not when she, like 213.
213 didn't do anything. I'm going to be honest, the robot was back. I did not.
Back? The robot's been back since Faith ended.
I know, but I was so broken. I didn't think I'd be able to make it through the last episode after Faith. Okay. And when this episode went down, like, to be honest, the only time that I got remotely choked up in this episode was when Jamie had his speech about, Lord, you gave me a rare woman and I loved her well. Mm-hmm. That's the only time that I got choked up. And it's, like I said, it's, I books. Get more moved when book stuff. I said lyrics almost, when book
text
ends up in the series.
And remember what Claire remarks on what Jillian's thoughts are regarding traveling. It's that precious stones would help guide one. As Jamie is walking Claire to the stone and he walks her forward and she's going backward, that was one of the most beautiful choices I couldn't have imagined that. How beautiful was that? It made it even sadder. It's like, I am going to be with you until the very end. I will be with you until you leave me.
Well, that, and I guarantee you she wouldn't have gone if he hadn't made her.
Maybe not. And then as he puts their hands up together on the stones, that was hard too. I loved how they touched the stones together.
And I love that they still don't show anyone actually traveling.
No, I think it's better that way. And then the final bits in the 60s. Brianna finally believes. Again, she's Thomas. Brianna Thomas, that's her new name.
Well, like father, like daughter.
Brianna Thomas. Yeah, but she truly was a Thomas. He was just being called a Thomas by the prince.
That's true.
So Brianna's, quote, no more lies is very reminiscent of Jamie's, quote, we have room for secrets, but no lies. Father and daughter again. Roger has gone to get help. He went to go make an anonymous call to the police. And they're all there until the sun rises. Roger returns from having made the anonymous call to the police. And Brianna tells Roger to show Claire what he had found. Remember this thing that he said? I've remarked on it twice now. We still don't know what Roger found. He shares that the research the Reverend did for Frank, there were a few Jacobites alive, and one alive after the battle, and one escaped execution. And that was James Fraser.
Now, correct me. In the book, they did not specifically state that it was James Fraser.
So much happened in the books that got to this point, I couldn't even tell you, because...
Like, they said that it was an officer of Lovett's. They said that for sure, but they did not, if I'm not mistaken, I don't believe that they specified
a name,
and it wasn't until they went back, they were like, well, it could have been him, and he wasn't part of the people that were memorialized at Beaulieu or whatever. And then when they went further back and then found all of the Dunbonnet and all the other things, that they started putting things together and saying, I think he made it.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad the Dunbonnet didn't.
That'll come.
I mean, yeah.
I bet it'll come next season. Because he has to still do that, or else he wouldn't have been able to stay in the...
No, I'm sure he'll do it. I'm saying that she didn't say it. Because that was something Brianna said. And here we see the seeds of Voyager. Right here. Voyager. The sunrise of the stones was gorgeous. Now, what did you think with the way the show ended with the camera going, like, into the stone? Was that, like... Like, foreshadowing Claire going back to the stone?
Perhaps. What strikes me is it's now two seasons that he's done this, where I just don't think they can end a season without...
Going to the stones?
No, being just a little kitschy.
Oh.
Like, super happy and kitschy. Like, it was, like, the we're on the boat, we're happy she's pregnant, it's a great day. Yay, sing me a song! And then this one, it was kind of the same thing. Like... Katrina looked amazing. Like, they lit her so well. I meant to mention this earlier. When Claire and Jamie, and I almost said Jer and Claymie, but I didn't. But when Claire and Jamie were at the stones and he's about to walk her back and they're having their disagreement, in the background, behind Claire's head, is a freaking rainbow.
Aww.
A rainbow. Like,
was it real?
Oh, yeah. It's a legitimate rainbow. Aww. And it's like it's muted, like it's because you can tell it's way off in the distance, which is not unheard of because it's always raining somewhere in Scotland, even when there's sun. But if you go back and watch the scene with Claire and Jamie at the stones, there is a rainbow behind Claire's head. Go find it. It's amazing.
We're just before she goes back?
Yes.
Aw. You guys have to go find the rainbow.
Taste the rainbow.
I was about to say, if you want to have Skittles, you're more than welcome to. So that's a wrap of... Outlander Season 2, Dragonfly and Amber. Now, coming up, we'll have probably something a little, I think, if everything goes as planned, something a little special for the next episode, which is in a few days. And then after that, we'll have Comic-Con something or other, which will probably be a little bit late because of our travel. And after that, within a week or three, because we don't have an exact date yet, what's coming up next, Sam?
Some kind of... read-along, yeah. People.
So we will...
Now, people have been asking me, and I've been stating unequivocally that we are shooting for early August.
So we're excited for the Voyager read-along. We hope you are, too.
And my favorite book of the series.
And exactly. So Summer will be able to take that over from me. Thank you for joining us on this Season 2 of Outlander. And we hope that you'll join us for our Voyager read-along.
Thank you to our generous audio host, Audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod,
or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.